Hello everyone. So this talk is a perfect continuation after the previous one, because I'm showing you like a practical use case for Kubernetes. Here it's not grid, it's more about how we can use Kubernetes for system tests in the EOS and CTA use case. We showed you that yesterday, but a small recap. This is what data archiving at CERN is about. You see we're increasing a lot. We keep storage ad aeternum. We have a lot of libraries, several many tape drives, and about 20,000 tapes. Basically, we're using currently a bit under 200 petabytes. But the current slot capacity is 0.6 exabytes. Okay. And the thing with storage is that it's similar as CPU. It's always exponentially growing. As we explained yesterday in the storage vision from the storage group at CERN, we're going to evolve the data archiving at CERN as EOS is a strategic storage platform for disks, and tape is a strategic long-term media archive. EOS and tapes are meeting in CTS, so it's a CERN tape archive that I presented yesterday, so there won't be a recap there. Hope you remember. So it means that we need to develop the software, and as I showed you yesterday, the development roadmap is very aggressive, like 2 years, something like that, for a massive data archiving system that's supposed to be used for that will be used in RN 3. And EOS and CTS, they are tightly coupled softwares, so they need tightly coupled developments. When we implement a feature in CTA, it often has its sibling in EOS. We need also extensive and systematic testing, because we want to really limit the regression. So whenever a code change is done in EOS, we don't want it to break something into the EOS plus CTA couple. And similarly for CTA, we don't want to break anything elsewhere. So when I started to work on system testing, I had first to look at what was done previously in the Castor integration tests. So here, the situation was fairly easy, as all the components of Castor are within one single Git repository. What was done there is that our work was based on VM. Puppet deploys development instances, and we have a few external dependencies. Castor relies on an Oracle database, so one database per dev instance, and one virtual tape library implemented using MHVTL. That was barely what was needed. And how did it go in practice? So in practice, we had many issues, in fact, with the VM and the Puppet approach. In fact, whenever you take you want to develop to deploy a developer instance from scratch, it takes a long time because you need to deploy several VMs. And, 1 hour 30, something like this. It's not really something that we could do at every commit. The code change in Castor often requires Puppet manifest changes. So trying to extend this approach to EOS and CTA is even worse, because you have a change in EOS, you have a change in CTA, then you need to change Puppet manifest. You have three different repositories that you maintain. You need to maintain synchronized, and forget about regression. It will never work, as it already never worked here. And another problem is that we're working with tapes. We are about data archiving. So we want to do real tape hardware tests. And the problem is that with this approach, we didn't have access to hardware. So all the Castor tests on tapes were done ad hoc. So you take a machine out of production, you give it to a developer so that he tests a new feature he wants to implement, and he keeps the tape server for 1 hour, but more often it's days or weeks or longer. And this is not really something we can easily trigger automatically or extend. So yeah, this is a bit how the environment look like. Developers, they have their own environment, they work on their laptops, they do all the tricks they want. Then they have their dev test infrastructure that is puppetized. The various VMs may diverge a bit, so sometimes you need to reinstall them because something went kaboom in there. And you have a completely different world where you have the QA, quality assurance, and the master. And this world has access to real tape, but not the dev environment. So you have to jump this fence to get access to real tape, and it's really convenient. So how do we do that? First, a small recap on the situation with the CTA and EOS. It's a bit more complex here because we have two distinct software projects. So each with its own repository. And we have a bit more external dependencies. So each instance requires one database, one virtual tape library, one object store, a bit of external storage for EOS because, I mean, you need to store files in EOS to be able to see how they are transferred to tape or they are recalled from tapes. So there are a few additional ones here. So how to fix the problems? Because I don't want to spend my life maintaining diverging repositories and trying to maintain VMs using Puppet. So, since I'm lazy, I don't want any manual operation. I mean, only to fix problems when there are a lot of issues. I'm also impatient, so I want it to be real fast. I don't want to wait 1 hour and 30 minutes to just be able to reproduce a problem, fix it, then redeploy for another 1 hour and 30 minutes to see that my fix has been done. I mean, I would be wasting days on this. And this system must allow us similarly beta testing deployments because we're developing a completely new software, so we want beta tester to be able to give us some feedback on the commands. We want them to try new workflows in CTA, to explain us what's wrong, communicate quickly with the developers, and have a quick feedback so that we can implement fixes. It must be reproducible also, and simple and bulletproof, okay? And it must also allow tests on real tape hardware. So that's a bit, what if we could fix everything? And let's first have a look at the CI part. This is a continuous integration. At CERN, we switched from SVN to Git, and the tool we currently everyone is using for development is GitLab. It provides nice features like continuous integration. This is the various continuous integration steps we have in GitLab. So whenever you do a commit, we go there, we build an SRC RPM, and we go along the line. I will detail that later. And the idea is here at the end to have system test running and validated them automatically so that we know that the build is good quality for production and we can publish it. So the RPMs, we are not publishing them because it's still a development platform, so we are passing them along to the various stages as artifacts. Then we publish also a generic Docker image in the GitLab registry. GitLab is providing almost everything like registry, issues, and of course the repository. And this Docker image contains all the versions of RPMs for instantiation. So all the artifacts that were built here, the EOS version that is corresponding to the commit of this given version of CTA, and XRoot version for this commit exactly, so that we can reproduce it. Okay? And those bit part here, so responsible for systems, we are running them in a custom Kubernetes cluster because we need the tape infrastructure, and Magnum is not providing it for us. So, as a bit of a detail, so developers, he comes and he does a commit in the registry. Then the GitLab shared runners have various steps, so build SRC RPMs. The SRC RPMs is passed an artifact to the next stage, which will build an RPM from the SRC RPM. So we validate that the SRC RPM to RPM process is working all the time. Then this part here takes all those and build a Docker image here, and this one is pushed to the Docker registry. It has the same ID at the commit ID, so that you can uniquely identify it whenever you have you checked out the code from the repository. Here we're running WorldGrind on the test. on the shared runners, but we have our own Kubernetes cluster where we are running those system tests. So the system tests are a set of scripts inside the repository. So if you change the workflows in TTH, you change the way you're implementing something because the interface between CTA and you has changed, it's already in the code. So it's consistent with what you have in the repository. You don't need anything external. Okay? An advantage with this approach is that we have a common reference infrastructure between developers, testers, and what we have in production. We are giving the receipts. It's not an asynchronous process like in Puppet, where you're passing along static SSS key for EOS. Here we're building the SSS keys, we're distributing when we're instantiating the CTA instance. So what a tester do from that, he just pulls the code, the latest version. Then he goes into some directory there, run the script to instantiate a CTA and EOS instance. This part here will pull the corresponding Docker image. He will run all his tests. And when he's not happy, he can submit an issue with a test script where he saw that something went wrong. And the developers, they can check out the version the tester reported there was a problem with and run the exact same test to issue a fix that will generate, in turn, a new Docker registry that the tester can test again. And this is a very quick turnaround. Like, in 1 hour, you do this round trip. While with a standard system, I mean, the first thing that developers are doing when testers are reporting something is that which version of the software are running. They are checking. They need to manually check the full environment of the testers. Here, everybody knows that everybody is using the same common environment, and this saves a lot of time. Okay, as you saw a few Kubernetes concepts in the previous presentation, basically pods. So the pods here are like virtual machines. They're hosting containers. The containers are those red squares here, running your program with the libraries. In a Kubernetes cluster, you have a good, nice isolation feature. Like, you can declare subclusters, which are defined in namespace. So a namespace is completely isolated. It has its own set of pods, a few configurations where you can read configuration from to configure your services, your pod, and your containers. And the services are declared in the namespace. So, for example, this service is service1.namespace1.cluster, easy. And if you need storage or any consumable resource, you just issue a persistent volume claim and you get it from the Kubernetes cluster so that it's not available for anyone else. For example, if you have here a database account, you're sure that the first one requesting a database account will get it and it won't be hijacked by anyone else on the cluster, like if you're sharing it in VM or whatever. Okay? So I speak about Kubernetes cluster, but a Kubernetes cluster is not much in our case. We just need a development infrastructure to test things. So in our case, it's just a single VM where we deployed a full Kubernetes cluster on it. I mean, there's just one host involved. So we can give one Kubernetes cluster to each developer. It's just one VM. So it's way less resources than in the previous Castor case. What we're giving to each developer is one Oracle database account so that they're responsible for managing that. If they want to use this Oracle database account on their laptop, they don't have to use it. They shouldn't use it on the Kubernetes cluster, but it's there, so they do whatever they want. One Ceph object store, because those are the two centrally managed resources that they need to have to be able to instantiate an EOS and CTA instance. And a few tape libraries, a few virtual tape libraries with a few drives and a few tapes so that they can test their workflows. So this is completely free. So instantiating a test is just like create a namespace so that you have an isolated environment where you can do whatever you want. If you screw something, you just delete the environment and the namespace, it will delete all the contained objects and you can just reinstantiate one. So it's bulletproof. I don't have to help anyone with this kind of strategy. Then all the services are instantiated. You just get what you need, so database, object store. And you instantiate the config mask so that you can configure the containers inside. And Okay, you start everything, you wait for the pod to be ready, and then you can run your system test. Basically, this is the kind of resources we're consuming in real life. So the objects, the configurations objects are, what is object store? Is it a local object store, a self object store? The database, is it an SQLite local database, or is it a remote Oracle database, or something else if we implement it? Tape library, is it real or virtual? We can manage different types of model of drives, and we implement the rest exactly the same way. In terms of pod, we have the CTA EOS frontend, the CTA EOS instance, which contains the MDM and the FST. It's declared at the service level. The frontend for CTA that manages metadata, as we saw yesterday. The CLI pod, which allow administrators to configure CTA workflows and everything. A tape server that is attached to the tape library that you're using. And a KDC. Why do we need a KDC? Because we need to authenticate the administrator. And we don't want to depend on external resources for the KDC, because then we would have to change password, we would have to maintain synchronization. And we have our own internal KDC that we destroy when we're finished. So if we need more users, we just declare them here. We're not impacting the rest. It's completely inside the namespace. Then we set up the EOS workflow when the pod are ready. We accept the CPU file to see, and then we wait until it's on tape. We remove the disk copy and we retrieve it from CTA, and we wait until the file is back on EOS. If it's okay, then we validate the test and the system test passes in the GitLab CI workflow. How do we do that with real tape drives? Okay, so the thing is that the Puppet manifest I deployed on the VM for the dev instances, I just made it deployable on real hardware. I just added also a physical tape library resource in Jira so that Puppet distributes disjoint sets of resources to each physical instance. And I slightly increased the timeout for the system test, as mounting a real tape is a bit longer than mounting a virtual tape. And okay, it's working. Okay. So this allows us to deploy the exact same Kubernetes instance on dev instances, on test instances, on virtual hardware, on Oracle database, SQLite, central object store, or local object store. And we can run exactly the same set of scripts everywhere. Okay. So, a bit of about what we learned here. This is very very powerful approach that address and federates all the use cases. Nowadays, even developers they are deploying their own VM on their laptop to have a Kubernetes cluster so that can do the test and development on their laptop, deploying a full infrastructure without depending on resources at CERN. So you can do that on plane. It's fast, it's flexible, it's isolated. Everything is self-contained in the repository. It's also reproducible, so you take a commit, you deploy it, you know that it will be deployable in a year from now, and you will be able to do some regression tests. And you just create a new branch and work on this to integrate it later. It's perfectly working with all the Git workflows. What you need to do is write a bit more system tests because it's a complex infrastructure, and evaluate possible predictions used as containers are really gaining a lot of traction. We saw in the previous presentation for executing LHC workflows. We have also the PaaS infrastructure at CERN, platform as a service infrastructure that's running inside Kubernetes to provide web services. Why not having a full tape infrastructure running on Kubernetes? Okay, that's my decision. I don't know if I have a bit more time. Yeah. So I can show you what it is in real life. What in real life means instantiating a Kubernetes cluster, and from the repository and create all those tests. So basically, here I have a checkout on my dev instance. Julien, it's me. I expose the namespace and run a create instance.sh script that is contained within the repository. This creates all the services I explained to you previously. This is a web interface to monitor what's going on the Kubernetes cluster on the machine. So you see that all the services are here. Here we have an init pod that just makes sure that it initializes the database. It format the tapes. and does a lot of other initialization stuff that makes sure that the database is empty, make sure that the objector is empty. And okay, since we're using the same Docker image for all the pods, we need to install a few RPMs in the beginning. We're caching all those so that we're sure that all the tests will be reproducible at a later time. So this is what's happening on the standard out. Okay, it's already finished. And now we're just creating the other pods. So CTA CLI, the tape server, CTA ES frontend, because all the resources have been initialized according to what we required. And you see all the pods coming back and connecting to the service they will provide later. So this is CTA CLI, I believe. Okay, it's a bit too fast, but that's video rendering. Basically, each of them in there. We're waiting for the KDC to configure. So you see that everything is synchronized. We're starting all the pods together, and then they're waiting for the configuration. So we have scripts to generate the SSS keys for EOS and CTA to be able to communicate. We have scripts to create new users in the KDC and make sure that we're propagating the key tabs to the CTA CLI pod, for example, so that everything is kind of, we're providing like a receipt for an administrator to build a full CTA plus EOS instance. There's nothing hidden. Okay, so here we're configuring the SSS keys. You see that the result of the key tab, it's CTA test, whatever, it's on stuff. And then we will just wait for EOS to be fully configured. So add the FSTA up, the MGM. You can look in real time at everything, what's happening on the various pods, on the various containers. We're also collecting all the logs locally so that those are available. If something failed, you get all the logs from EOS, from CTA, from the various pods, and the various processes. They are available as artifacts, even if the CI stage failed. You can get them and analyze them post-mortem if something stupid went wrong, or if a resource was not available. You will just dismiss the case and be able to rerun the full pipeline without any much hassle. So here you see we just copied, extra DCP'd a file to EOS, and we're waiting for it to be archived on tape. Okay, it's here. Then we move it, and then, okay, it's already the retrieval part. The system test in itself is pretty quick. Like, it's 2 minutes out of 5 minutes of the required by the instantiation, the creation, and everything. And at the end, okay, all tests have been passed, and then we're just destroying the namespace, and when we're destroying the namespace, all the pods, all the services, all the person volumes will be made available again at the cluster level so that you can trigger another dev instance on this Kubernetes cluster, and you can restart from scratch, okay? So here, just waiting for the pods to be killed because there's a 30-second like timeout, but that's it. So basically, that's it.
All right, and we have time for one or two questions. Do you have any questions?
Just out of curiosity, how long does it take to run all of your systems tests for the whole of EOS and CAS project?
How long it takes?
All of the tests that you've developed so far.
All of the tests, you see here in real time, this was the system part for the system test part for EOS and CTA. We can parallelize them according to the number of tests we have, but currently we have just very small tests. It takes more time to run worldwide, for example, on CTA code. So the full duration, we have statistics in GitLab, but it's between 20 minutes and 30 minutes when something goes wrong in the shared runner.
That's really quite fast.
And
how do you sit there and decide what tests should be run independently and what tests can be run in series and managing your tests? Because you must build up a lot of tests over time.
Yeah, so this part, as I said, we need to write more tests. So we started with this basic test, archive and retrieve a file, and all the rest of the tests will be coordinated by gtest. So we have already the gtest framework implemented in CTA, and we will build on top of that to launch all the test commands via Kubernetes and have asserts to decide when the tests start to fail and what we're doing. But basically, the idea is mostly to have more runners and run as many tests as possible in parallel. Because we don't want to risk the possibility of having a test that modifies the condition for the next test.
To tie the two presentations from CERN together, would the idea be to, if this goes into production, to use the Magnum instance on OpenStack?
The thing is that we couldn't go for Magnum for a simple reason. First, we need to have a specific kernel driver to have the image VTL module. But even if we did that, the thing is that if we provide, if we could ask the Magnum to the CM group to provide us a Magnum cluster with the image VTL, then how do we deploy this on real tape hardware? And how do we deploy that on developer laptops? I mean, the thing is that we have a use case that fits everyone, and we need to keep control on it so that we can maintain all the scripts to deploy the full Kubernetes cluster on a laptop, on a tape server, or on a VM. And this Magnum use case will just be a very small use case for the more global use case we have. It will just be what we do with VMs. I mean, it wouldn't have much.
All right. Well, let's thank the speaker again.